are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, January 13th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. A merciful end to this insane week so that we can move on to the next insane week next week. As such, joining us, Cliff Schechter, to look back on the insane week that was. Also joining us on the program, equally as insane, Andy Kindler will be here. Meanwhile, Department of Justice, IG, investigates James Comey's decision to talk about the Clinton investigation that had already finished. NSA now allowed to share raw intel with other intel agencies. Happy birthday, President Trump.
What?
Repeal and replace seems to be coming. And why high-risk state insurance pools are a fraud when Paul Ryan talks about them. Meanwhile, Republican Congressman Chaffetz threatens the ethics chief post his criticism of Trump's no-conflict plan. Not Chaffetz's, the ethics chief. And, surprise, surprise, Trump lied again. The FBI also briefed him on the two-page report on the dossier about his, at the very least, water sports, and probably the banking. Meanwhile, Trump cybersecurity czar Rudy Giuliani's website is insecure as hell. And the DOJ finds civil rights violations in Chicago police force. Recap of the inauguration protests. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Just a crazy week. And it's still going to get crazier. There was another story, too, that I found that apparently, and this is the most, I think, sort of, this is the one that gives me the most pause. Supposedly, U.S. intelligence officials meeting with Israeli intelligence officials warned them not to share any information with the Trump administration until the intelligence agencies could make sure that could verify that he is not compromised. Apparently, they're afraid of Israeli intelligence being passed on to the Trump administration and then getting to Russia and then to the Iranians.
Right.
And
what's about Syria?
It seemed to be about, it could be about just about anything. And, you know, again, is there any way for us to verify that story? It was out of Ynet, right? In Israel?
I think Haaretz has reported on it as well. So if they did, then that adds more credibility.
It would be odd for this to be coming out of any political body in Israel, right? Because They're certainly as happy as anybody to see Obama go and happy to have Trump come in. I don't think we've had a...
The dynamic that you're seeing now between the intelligence services and Trump is the dynamic that's happened in Israel for a long time, which is not to idolize their intelligence services, but they're like the realist, rational people, while the political arm has become incredibly demented and insane.
Like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. This is something different. I think the intelligence agencies believe that their own president has the possibility to function as a spy for Russia.
I mean, that's the definition of next level.
Passing on information. I don't know. It
also could just be another leak to embarrass him.
And we should say that, like, this is what spies do, right? Like, well, let's get our buddy Yossi to report this in Haaretz.
Oh, you want me to report? Okay, into this. You're Jewish.
But it does seem a little far afield, right? It's not like it's getting a lot of attention in U.S.
No, I think it's and all I meant by the dynamic is, of course, it's different because none of them think Netanyahu's a spy. But I just mean that if you look like with the Iran deal and you look at like generals and former Mossad people, they're like, actually, that's a pretty good deal.
Right.
And then you have the political apparatus is incredibly, it's almost like if Ted Cruz was president over there and he was warring with rational people in the intelligence services. So now we get a version of it plus Russian spy.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. We'll see how it all works out. Also, today we're going to...
want to share your Burnett idea?
What's that? Oh, yeah. This is the fantasy I have. That the moment that Donald Trump puts his hand on the Bible and raises his right hand to take the oath, maybe that'll be the tip too. He raises his left hand. And as soon as he does that, you know, the stairs on that dais.
Yes.
Mark Burnett walks down the stairs to rising music and goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, you have been part of the world's greatest reality show. Welcome to the election. A 25, you know, and it just all turns out to be, and just Trump turns around and he's just laughing. It's like the election reunion show. And he's like, I can't believe
it. I know that I'm an asshole, but you really think that I hate my country that much?
And the things I had to say about Ivanka, like, well, how did that not?
Isn't it enough for me to be like an old lech now, but I want to imply that I want to F my daughter? I mean, it's a little sad what you'll all believe about me.
When Billy Bush and I were in the voiceover booth doing the whole back and forth to do the ADR for that bus thing. We were just like, nobody's going to buy this.
Like, game over. This is done. People are going to call this out. But somehow it worked. I'm actually troubled. I'm going to do a tour with Tim Wise now to help increase the sensitivity of this country. It's a little disturbing, actually.
Really crazy. All right. Well, I just want to thank the American public. And don't forget, we'll be on 8 p.m. on Fridays
for the election. The tape gets released next week. All right, Hillary, you want to come up here and get sworn in? Okay, enough joking already. Now she should actually do the job, right?
And James Comey, he was fantastic.
I mean, James Comey, and the way he said...
Totally believable.
Literally 2 days ago, he goes to Ron Wyden, I don't comment on ongoing investigations in public. I mean, wasn't that an incredible callback?
Did you see Ron Wyden's face? Like, he didn't even laugh. It was amazing. I was like, how is he not breaking?
I mean, kudos all around.
Ladies and gentlemen, when Bernie Sanders began his race for presidency, it was considered by the political establishment and the media to be a fringe campaign. You know this. I know this. We've talked about this a million times. By the time Sanders' campaign came to a close, however, it was clear that Bernie had run one of the most consequential campaigns in modern history. And he is staffing up, folks. Matt Duss, I think it was reported today, is joining Sanders. I mean, he's beefing up on foreign policy. And although his campaign may be over, for Bernie Sanders, the political revolution has just begun. Fall long as Bernie keeps the new administration in check and leads the way toward a future, progressive future in his new multi-month New York Times bestseller, Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. You know, this is the thing. This is like, we talk about getting a majority report gift for people. Honestly, this is a gift to give to your relatives. Washington Post says that Sanders is spinning lessons about what really matters in life. It's available in hardcover, ebook, and audio wherever books are sold, read by Bernie Sanders and Mark Ruffalo. For more information, visit ourrevolutionbook.com, hashtag read the burn. Again, that's ourrevolutionbook.com. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's Friday. And every Friday I wake up right after I say, ghost protocol, because of the horrible nightmare I've had. I sing this song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well, Sammy. How are you doing?
Well, you know, I was just mentioning that I've been waking up. I've been having various nightmares every night. They're not terrifying nightmares, but they're like slow burns. And last night, as I was walking to work today, I realized like I had nightmares about a huge fire off in the distance. And I'm also waking up, I think, and it has something to do with my daughter's alarm clock, which has this weird tone to it. And, like the first, like 30 seconds when I wake up, I just keep hearing the words ghost protocol, which is from like that Mission Impossible movie. And
yeah,
but it was like when they were like, we're all burnt, we have to disappear. And that's all I keep. And then I go and I make her lunch. And so it's all really disturbing for me.
Now, why do you keep hearing that sentence about the ghost protocol?
I don't know. I don't know if it's like my subconscious is telling me, like, it's time to get out. Like, go.
You think maybe it's just time for us to get the F out of the country.
I don't know if it's time for you. I don't, I mean, like, I'm not saying it's time to get, it's, you know, I think I have.
Listen, Sam, I've tied my fate to yours now.
I can tell you,
screwed up badly enough that they want you dead, you know, you're dragging me down with you.
In FUBAR, there was I wrote a chapter about like how to sort of just disappear. And it was all about like getting a bunch of different easy passes under your own name and then putting them on different cars. there was, I mean, and so I have that tendency. So to think in that way, and I don't know. Now I feel like my subconscious is just like, or to be fair, it could just be like, I got to get away from my family. And like my kids are driving me crazy. So I'm just saying, Kelly's giving me a look. And
there
so,
you go.
So all right, Cliff, I want to get into this stuff. But before we do, you have a big announcement, which I am pretty excited about it. And it's really, in many ways, an unprecedented announcement.
Exactly. It's unprecedented. It is. The big announcement, which is I am going to start a podcast because I have loved these Fridays so much. And actually, a lot of kind people out there have sent me nice emails. And I mean, there's a lot of people who have also sent me emails telling me I killed Christ, but I'm assuming we're not doing this for them. but of the ones who didn't accuse me of killing Christ and other types of things, I started thinking I'd love to do something. I mean, we are in an unprecedented era right now with Donald Trump, and I think we need as many voices out there who are willing to call him out on all of his lies, and frankly, there's so many of them every day, it's easy to miss many of them. So I decided to start this podcast, hopefully with some help from you guys, because you're smarter than me, but it will be called An Unprecedented Podcast Bigly. You can, I think, figure out where that's from. We have a GoFundMe up. I just put it up the other day, and so far people have been nice enough to make some donations, so we've almost reached $1,000. I set a very high goal of $20,000, but who knows where we'll get. I'm hoping we get up there. But I do have fine parting gifts to offer people. Would you like to know what those are, Sam?
I would, indeed. Why don't you tell us, Cliff?
Well, thank you, sir. For those who are willing to give a $20 gift through the GoFundMe, you will get your very own copy of a signed The Real McCain, which, as you all know, tops the charts at Amazon right now. That and a nickel will get you on the – no, I'm kidding. But I will show my appreciation. With that, we have a certain number of Real McCains lying around here, so I can't say everybody. We'll do a raffle. We got about 7 or 8 of them. So anybody putting $20 in, we'll get that. Or we'll be put in the raffle, and hopefully I can get them their very own signed copy. But much better than that, and clearly much cooler than that, I believe once when I came on your show, I told the story of how I got to know a guy by the name of Mark Hamill, who, for people who don't know, he's Luke Skywalker.
Right.
I'm guessing the entire people world probably does know. And he, being as upset and horrified by the way things are going in this country as many of us here, has kindly, incredibly kindly offered that for anyone who is willing to give $50 or more, you will get either a signed picture from Mark Hamill made out to you, or there are various objects one could agree on sending. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to send like a double-bladed lightsaber to him to sign, but some sort of items, a toy from your childhood, something of that nature, or from your current hood, and he would be willing to sign one of these or make out it to you, and again, or a picture, depending on how many of those he has. And the big one is for you high rollers out there, anyone who is willing to make a very generous, incredibly generous $250 gift, Mark Hamill has agreed that he will, if you saw when this went viral on Twitter the other day, he will make a recording of one of Donald Trump's tweets in the voice of the Joker. And if that's what you want, or just do whatever voice you do want for your voicemail.
Sold.
It will be a personalized voicemail for you.
Sold. I'm sold on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that would be pretty cool.
Yes,
so
awesome.
There you go, folks. $20, you get thrown in the raffle for a signed copy of The Real McCain. But much cooler even than that, $50, you get a signed picture or smaller type item that you want signed by Mark Hamill, and $250, and your voicemail is the coolest freaking thing since sliced bread.
Well, we're going
to put. There you go. We have to get to this up, but folks, Sam and those guys are going to tweet out the GoFundMe address.
And we'll put it on majority.fm too. People can check it out.
Put it on majority.fm. Right. I'll tweet it out. So please be looking for it and please support it, because I really would love to do this, because we need everything we can.
It'll
get
be fun.
Out there and with it. Yeah.
All right,
here we go.
Let's get into some stuff here. There's been a couple of stories. I mean, obviously, this week the story of that, now it appears as of today, James Comey, separately, I guess, from Clapper, debriefed Donald Trump on the two-page dossier, which, as far as I can tell, may or may not come from the 34-page unverified dossier. But it is stuff that the intelligence agencies felt was serious enough to debrief them. There's also a story in that we saw in Israeli press saying that U.S. intelligence agencies are telling Israeli intelligence agencies not to share information with the Trump administration quite yet.
Is that incredible?
That's insane. And
go ahead. Sorry.
If true, it's getting to the point where it's very difficult to sort of surmise what is or is not true. But meanwhile, now Comey is also being investigated by the IG of the DOJ if he broke any protocols. Or why? I mean, it seems to me he did break protocols. Like, I don't know what the nature of the investigation is.
Right.
But it's whether he followed proper procedures and policies in connection.
Whether he broke the protocols, rules. They have rules about not releasing anything that can potentially affect an election within 60 days of an election. And he was told not to do it by Loretta Lynch, among others, and he decided that he was going to do it anyhow. And he went ahead and did it. And I think, to me, this is incredibly important. It's not about revenge or schadenfreude, although I'm not going to claim I won't be happy to see Comey suffer the consequences of his actions. But it's really more about, again, like so much of what opposing everything that's going on around Donald Trump, it's what kind of country we want to have. Because just think about this, folks, if every 4 years, maybe even 2 years, do we want to be sitting there saying, well, what's the FBI or CIA going to release about whoever it is who's running? I mean, there needs to be a clear message that this is completely unacceptable in a democracy. And the fact that he had the information on Trump and Russia, which we'll get to, which is some of the other things that you brought up, and yet thought that was something that wasn't worth people knowing, but the non-scandal of these stupid emails was, is incredible. It's incredible, and if that doesn't need to be investigated, I'm not sure what does.
What's interesting about this release, and again, this is just like, I just feel that we are just driving so blind here, but something's up. And one of the things from this release about this investigation, it's this line. Whether underlying investigative decisions may have been based on improper considerations. So it's not saying, this is not about whether or not he followed proper procedures and policies, because I think probably I don't know that there are guidelines. I mean, there are guidelines and procedures and policies in place, but that seems pretty clear. He broke those procedures. He thought it was extenuating circumstances. The real question is, what is this investigation really about? And I'm not convinced it's not about saying, like, what was driving Comey's decisions? Not whether or not he simply broke procedures, but, like, what was behind all this stuff? I think this is their
way of trying to go into
New York.
We have to know.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, again, I always feel like, I'm careful. I don't want to ever sound like a conspiracy theorist, but think about what's happened in the last year. And think about if you'd said any of this stuff a year or two ago, if you would have been considered a conspiracy theorist, you would have. In fact, when plenty of evidence was starting to come out, my gosh, how much did you need? You had Trump asking the Russians to hack Hillary, showing here that he kind of knew what was going on. You had Roger Stone, you know, predicting that WikiLeaks was about to release something on Hillary, which they did, exactly when he said they were going to.
Yep.
But the Russians, even some members, higher up members in Russia, claiming they'd had contacts with Trump's team. You had the example of what these guys have done in the Ukraine and other places. You had, so to act like, and I'm sorry, there are some people on the left who just seem to think that they can conflate this with people wanting to start another Cold War, as if all of us who don't want a foreign adversary to undermine the United States somehow are looking for another Cold War. I'm looking for whoever it is. I wouldn't care if it was the Russians or, you know, any other, you know, autocratic government, frankly, any democracy, anybody undermining our democracy. I mean, I just didn't get the reaction at the time. This all seemed pretty obvious to me. It fit a pattern of behavior by this government and by Vladimir Putin, and with what was being said, and the fact that Donald Trump, in an eerie way, has never once criticized Putin. He only defends or says great things about him. And so now we've got more has come out. And of course, you had this report released by this whole thing released by BuzzFeed. And there's a big debate. You know, a lot of us made as many golden shower jokes as we could just to laugh. Mm. On.
True.
But the truth of the matter is that's not even the most important part about it. What came out and what CNN and The Guardian took from that and have confirmed, of course, is that the FBI was suspicious enough and had enough information to go to the FISA court and request a warrant, which they weren't given initially and eventually were given in October, to look into a few of the people surrounding Trump who we've all talked about, your Carter Pages and these guys who clearly had contacts with Russia.
Well, here's something I want to tease out about this. Okay, this is what I found interesting about this, and I haven't seen much reporting on this part of the story. The FBI went to the FISA court, I think, first time in June. Their warrant was rejected, making that the 14th warrant out of 35,000 that have ever been rejected. Then they went back in July or August, and their warrant got rejected again, making that the 15th warrant ever rejected out of 30-some-odd thousand. Then they went back in October. Now, October, Manafort has already left the campaign, right? So this is an ongoing thing because they're looking for a warrant to basically put a tap on, and it has to do with two Russian banks. There's a couple of things that come up here. I mean, the real issue, it seems to me, is... And at one point, like in one of the BBC reports, it said, like, we didn't find anything about banking in this. And it's almost like, I don't know. I mean, everything, again, all this is like conjecture and speculation. This is like stuff that really is like, you know, we're sitting at a bar and just getting wasted and talking about, like, you know, the different things here that stick out as weird. But it's weird to me that that British report said something like that coming out of this MI6 thing when clearly... The FBI had reason to suspect, right, that there was an issue going on here. What also strikes me is that they get rejected. The number of rejections from the FISA court is literally like constitutes a greater than 10% of all the rejections ever from the FISA court. That to me sounds like the people who wrote that warrant did a very bad job in writing that warrant. Twice. And, you know, based upon my experience with Michael in this office, I know that instead of when Michael doesn't want to do something, instead of like saying, I'm not going to do it, he just does it so poorly that I'm like, okay, whatever. And
you know, is there anything not politicized at this point, Sam? And again, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but, you know, maybe the warrant was terribly done. Or maybe there's something else here going on we don't even know. Because to reject this twice, I don't know.
I mean, clearly...
I don't know what I know anymore,
right?
To be quite honest with you.
Yes.
But what I do know is the FBI went and requested this, and eventually it was granted. You're right. They went twice and failed, but the third time it was granted.
And we don't know the results of that investigation.
I'm sorry?
We don't know if that investigation is ongoing. We don't know how it was tied up. We don't know anything.
We do know it's ongoing because Comey, when he was being questioned the other day, you know, in the Senate, said that he could not talk about an ongoing investigation. So he actually said it was ongoing.
Did he say that Trump. He couldn't talk about an ongoing investigation, or he couldn't talk about whether or not there were investigations?
I'm positive. I mean, I guess to be 100% sure, I'd go back and look, but I'm 99.999% sure it was an ongoing investigation, is what he said. Because that led the Democrats to retort, funny, you could talk about other ongoing investigations, but not this one. I can't remember who it was who retorted that. But in addition to what we've just said, Sam, two other things have come out since then. You brought up the BBC. They went beyond The Guardian and CNN, and they reported that it was a joint task force looking into Trump and looking to Trump's people. So they reported that it wasn't just the FBI, it was the CIA, it was a joint task force, a number of intelligence agencies were doing that because they had enough evidence to think that this was taking place. And then we have David Ignatius, right, in the Washington Post. Again, I'm not saying he's infallible, it could be wrong, I haven't always agreed with David Ignatius, but when you see enough of this stuff, come on, I mean, it just gets to be a point, which is that on the day that Obama imposed sanctions, Michael Flynn was on the phone with the Russians numerous times that day, which not only is an incredible breach of protocol, but quite likely a violation of the Logan Act, which we'll never prosecute him for because we never seem to follow up on that. But he's not even in the position yet, and he's calling them and having conversations with key members of the Kremlin. So, I mean, at what point does it just get to reach the point of absurdity? We know the Russians, you know, did this kind of hacking from past behavior, and from now 16 intelligence agencies saying they did. They all, you know, Trump claimed they should do it because he seemed to know. Roger Stone, I mean, the Russians themselves, you know, we have evidence they were cheering when Trump won. I mean, there just has to be a point where, you know, we've passed a reasonable doubt here. That's what I would say. And, you know, we're Americans and kind of want to believe in this government and believe in its independence. And nothing tells me right now we don't have people sitting who are about to take over who we can trust in the slightest are independent actors.
Just to circle back on that Comey thing, this is what he said. I would never comment on investigation, whether we have one or not, in an open forum like this. So he didn't.
Wasn't there a second, though? There was no second.
I really can't answer one way or another. And then Wyden said, will you provide an unclassified response to these questions and release it to the American prior to January 20th? Sir, I will answer any question you ask, but the answer will likely come back as I just gave you. I can't talk about it.
Okay. So then I was wrong there. I apologize. I was sure I saw that. Okay.
I mean, it's still, I mean, obviously, we know there was an investigation, right? Like, we know that. So we don't know whether or not it's ongoing or if it's been closed up. But certainly, look, Wyden knows. You know, this is the way they do this stuff, right? I mean, Wyden asked, was it Clapper, are you guys, accessing people's phone calls?
Right.
No. And then, you know, two or three months later, this stuff comes out. I mean, here's the thing is that, like, we are... And there's two parallel stories here, right? There's this story of, like, we have this compromised president who is a lunatic. And then while he's being a lunatic and compromised, and we're talking about golden showers and, extant loans to his empire and his lack of putting stuff in a blind trust and whatnot,
Well, that's a whole nother level of. I mean, he's violating the Constitution the moment he takes the oath of office. But the
emoluments clause, all of this. Yep. I mean, so that's going on in one area, and then in the other area, we have, and he just sort of mouths off and says, "We're going to have repeal and replace. It's going to happen as soon as Tom Price gets in. We're gonna introduce the bill, and that'll probably be around February or so." And he says, may take a week to replace, may take an hour, may happen immediately. Box is in the Republicans. They've come out now, and everybody seems to be on board with the repeal and replace. We know the outlines of this. It's going to be Tom Price's proposal, which is, I think this is important. We need to be able to talk about the insanity that is Donald Trump, and then talk about what it is distracting from, which is what in normal times you and I would call the insanity of the right wing's policy proposals. And just to go over this quickly, and you know, we don't know what the plan is, but we can guess that it's based on Price's plan, because Tom Price has done this. Tax credits, health savings accounts.
I mean, and let's sort of break this down for a second. Where people, I think, well, people who listen to this show are quite well informed and understand. But health savings accounts, I mean, you honestly couldn't come up with something more ludicrous. For people that have the funds already to support health insurance, they're a great vehicle.
Great.
Right? I mean, it's a tax-free vehicle. It means that you have more money to spend on health insurance. However, if you're one of the many people right now who are helping subsidize so they can afford health insurance, who don't have the money, they do nothing for you. You know, I mean, it's like saying, nothing. Hey, here's what we've done for all of you. We've created bank accounts for everybody. And then people are like, well, we don't have any money, though.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's essentially what a health
savings
account
is. And it's the same with the tax credit. Same with the tax credit.
Right. It does nothing to take care of so many of the 20 million people who've now been insured by the Affordable Care Act, many of whom, up to, if I remember, 400% of the poverty line, received some form of subsidies because they can't fully afford insurance. And this does nothing to help that. So it's just like I hesitate to even call it a Band-Aid. It's a joke. It does nothing.
It provides. It also calls for existing medical conditions can't be denied as long as people had continuous insurance coverage for 18 months prior to selecting a new policy. Also, and we'll go into the risk pools, but in a bit, the state risk pools, but. Which is the fourth element of the plan. The fifth element is limiting the amount that companies can take on deductions from health insurance, so that they're not giving away too much generous health insurance. You know, there was sort of like the Cadillac tax on some level. So let's listen to this clip of Paul Ryan. He is in a town hall in Washington D.C. last night. And before we look at this clip. I am so annoyed with the failure of the Democratic Party to hold Paul Ryan to account for Donald Trump. Like, I mean, this has been something I have been screaming about for months and months prior to the election. They have a pathological reluctance to tie Donald Trump to Paul Ryan, and it is a massive, massive mistake. Paul Ryan is the most vulnerable. He is the most under pressure. He is the leverage point. And to normalize Paul Ryan, because he's not as goofy as and heavily medicated or whatever it is that Donald Trump is a massive mistake. And so here is, let's look at this clip. This is Paul Ryan doing a town hall. Paul Ryan, who is has been given a free pass by the Democrats to support Donald Trump in everything he does. Paul Ryan getting a question from Jeff Jeans, who is he's a guy in the town hall. And here it is. Here is this question and Paul Ryan. And you'll also hear the voice of Jake Tapper.
Problem. You just mentioned pre-existing conditions. Let me introduce you, and please get up, because I know you want to engage. Jeff Jeans is from Sedona, Arizona. He was a lifelong Republican, and then something happened. Jeff.
Come back.
I was a Republican, and I worked for the Reagan and Bush campaigns. Just like you, I was opposed to the Affordable Care Act. When it was passed, I told my wife, we would close our business before I complied with this law. Then, at 49, I was given 6 weeks to live with a very curable type of cancer. We offered three times the cost of my treatment, which was rejected. They required an insurance card. Thanks to the Affordable Care Act, I'm standing here today alive. being both a small business person and someone with pre-existing conditions, I rely on the Affordable Care Act to be able to purchase my own insurance. Why would you repeal the Affordable Care Act without a replacement?
Oh, we wouldn't do that. We want to replace it with something better. First of all, I'm glad you're standing here. I mean, really, seriously. I mean,
so glad you're not dead.
Right. Really, I don't believe him.
Can I say one thing? I hate to interrupt you. Can I say one thing? I want to thank President Obama from the bottom of my heart because I would be dead if it weren't for him.
Wow. There you go.
So there it is. Now, Paul Ryan claiming that they're going to replace it with something better, and we'll take a moment to pull that apart.
We talked about, obviously, the health savings account and these tax breaks right now, but I think it was last week we discussed this, which is simple. Like, I mean, there's really not much you need to know past this. The Republican Party now is a party that refuses to govern because they refuse to say that anything is worth spending money on unless it's tax subsidies, it's subsidies for big oil or defense. And I'm probably missing a few other things in there. Some of them, of course, defend Social Security and Medicare because they're scared. But that's the sort of that's the key part of the whole thing here. Philip Klein over at the Washington Examiner wrote one of the most honest posts I've seen, which is he's a conservative. And he wrote, why is it that Republicans can't just say, you know, we don't believe everybody should have health insurance. We don't believe some people should have to pay for other people to have it. And that is why. So that's why they have to pretend and obfuscate and say, oh, don't worry, no one's going to lose their insurance, which is one of a thousand lies Kellyanne Conway tells a day. And Paul Ryan say, oh, we're going to replace it with something better, because they know if they just say we're taking away your health insurance, which is what they're really doing, they'll get pilloried even by their own people who've disproportionately benefited their base, white working class men.
100% correct. And I should say, you know, this was a classic case of a Republican seeing the light when something hits them, right? With this guy, I mean, well, all due respect to this cancer patient, when the rubber met the road. Yes, but you're absolutely right. The reality is the Republican position is that government should not be in the business of ensuring that everyone has health insurance. That's the Republican position. They can't articulate that. And so they have to pretend their proposals are going to provide that. And here is the key proposal, okay? We know that the tax credits, the health savings accounts, are contingent upon you having enough money for those things to have any value to you. The pre-existing conditions that their plan is you either can't be denied if you have continuous coverage, which of course is a joke because we know insurance companies cancel their plans all the time, and they're going to do this.
And find a way
often
that you're off for, like, seriously, sometimes 15 or 30 days.
Exactly.
And that would be it.
No, exactly. Put the tax deductions, reform on employer insurance aside for a moment. The high risk pools. Okay, here is Paul Ryan explaining the high risk pools. And the reason why I want to go through this is going to be a little bit belabored, folks. But this is really, really important for you to understand when you hear this stuff why it's bullshit. Okay, because high-risk pools existed in this country starting in 1976 up until the Affordable Care Act. They were, as of 2010, they were in 34 states across the country. They had various rules about them. The most successful supposedly was in Minnesota. Here is Paul Ryan talking about these high-risk pools. So here's the lie, and then I will tell you the truth of these high-risk pools and why Paul Ryan's plan is bullcrap.
State high-risk pools are a smarter way of guaranteeing coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. We had a really good one in Wisconsin. Utah had a great one. I was talking with a congresswoman from Washington today who was telling me how good their state high-risk pool is. What I mean when I say this is about 8% of all the people under 65 have that kind of pre-existing condition. My mother-in-law, cancer, she had melanoma in her 20s, breast cancer in her 50s, ovarian cancer in her 60s. People just have these things. And we don't want people to go poor or go bankrupt because this thing happens to them. So we obviously want to have a system where they can get affordable coverage without going bankrupt because they get sick. But we can do that without destroying the rest of the healthcare system for everybody else. That's the point I'm trying to make. What we should have done was fix what was broken in healthcare without breaking what was working in healthcare, and that's what, unfortunately, Obamacare did. So, by financing state high-risk pools to guarantee people get affordable coverage when they have a pre-existing condition like yourself, what you're doing is you're dramatically lowering the price of insurance for everybody else. So if we say, let's just as taxpayers, and I agree with this, finance the coverage for those 8% of Americans under 65 in a condition like yours, they don't have to be covered or paid for by their small business or their insurer who's buying the rates for the rest of the people in their insured pool, and you dramatically lower the price for the other 92% of Americans. Let's just directly fix that so that everybody else can get more competitive rates and they don't have to pay for insurance to try and cover for those kinds of really expensive people. The problem with Obamacare, the actuaries call it a death spiral. It's a really kind of ugly, gruesome term. But a death spiral is a mathematical term. They say when the insurance gets so expensive, healthy people won't buy it because it's just a trade-off. The penalty to not buy it is a lot cheaper than buying the insurance, so healthy people won't buy it. Therefore, they won't go and participate in the insurance pool to cover the losses that sicker people who have to have insurance buy it. That's what's happening to Obamacare now. So you have unhealthy people more buying it, healthy people not buying it, and that is why the rates are going up so much. That's why all the insurers are pulling out. Biggest health insurance company in the country last year, United, pulled out of Obamacare. Aetna pulled out of Obamacare. Humana pulled out of Obamacare. As I mentioned, five states now are down to one insurer. Over 1,000 counties in America are down to one insurer, and they're all getting double-digit premium increases because they have a monopoly. So clearly that's not working. And we see the worst is yet to come. The insurers are telling us they're going to pull out of whole states now. So we've got to step in front of this problem because as Republicans, we could just say, I think the president-elect said this yesterday, we could just sit back and watch it all happen and say, look at what the Democrats did. That would be irresponsible for us to do that. So we have to step in and rescue people from the collapse of this law. There are good objectives that they sought to achieve in this law. We agree with that. We think young people should be able to stay on their parents' plan until they're 26. We think there needs to be a solution, which we have, for people with pre-existing conditions. But we want more choices, lower prices, more competition, no monopolies. That's what we want to replace it with, and that's what we're working on.
Okay. So he's talking about 25...
So much bullshit.
Well, okay. Let's break down this, okay? The problems that he was talking about with the Affordable Care Act were more or less accurate. For the time being, let's just stipulate that, okay? There was problems in the exchanges. Health insurance companies do not want to participate in the individual insurance market. The vast majority of them don't want to do it. They're forced to do it because they want the group insurance business. When they participate in the group insurance business, it's not even their money. It's the company's money. They self-insure, and what the insurance companies do, they just administer it. The problems with the individual market are correct to a certain extent, and it's certainly we all know that the Affordable Care Act did not make insurance broadly affordable.
Right.
Here's where Paul Ryan's lie is.
Call it as affordable as it should be.
Right.
And there's a number of reasons for that which we can go into.
But let's not argue over the. Let's just stipulate there are problems with the Affordable Care Act. Here is where Paul Ryan's big lie is. These state risk pools. The reality of these state risk pools is that when you had 34 states who are implementing this. Over the course of those 30 years, up until 2010, there were only 300,000 people, no, excuse me, 200,000 people who participated in it at an annual cost of $2 billion. There are 4 million Americans who are actually eligible for this. Most of those people couldn't participate in those risk pools because the costs were too expensive. Even with the cost associated with those risk pools, in terms of what you had to pay for premiums, you had to wait sometimes between 2 and 12 months to actually get into those risk pools. So a lot of people, if they get like this guy with cancer, if he gets cancer and he's got 6 weeks to live, he's going to die. That guy dies. On top of that,
it's important to keep saying that, because sometimes we don't give, you know, there's not as direct a correlation from A to B, but it's very simple here.
Now he's saying 8% of
you will die.
He's saying 8% of people under the age of 65 are eligible for these pools. I've seen figures that around in 2011 it was 4 million people. So it's at least 4 million people. The cost of providing, and they're offering $25 billion over 10 years, $2.5 billion a year to subsidize these high risk pools when it costs $2 billion for 200,000 people. So people can do the math here. It will cost, according to an article in the Journal of General Internal Medicine in 2011, it would cost at least $24 billion a year to do these high-risk pools. $24 billion. They are shortchanging it by 10 times a year. And this is in 2011 numbers. We're now 8 years out from that, 7 years out from that. This is what they're going to do is they're basically just going to put, they're just taking people's health insurance and they're putting something up there that is a total lie. People have to understand it. If they were to fund this at $24, $25, $30 billion a year, yeah, that could work. But good luck with that, because
the moment
they repeal the Affordable Care Act, they're giving a huge tax cut to people who are making over $250,000 a year that has been financing the expansion of the Affordable Care, never mind Medicaid and whatnot. So
right.
This is just
think we should be forgetting
lot.
About people at the bottom who can't afford to get health insurance. If you are in that kind of situation, and the best one to give is that gentleman who he lied to, it's just simple. You will die. And there will be a couple hundred thousand people like this, at least, will kick off of health care who will not be able to get it and will die. And it's that's all this is. It's directly related to the policies that these guys are taking up. It's a straight line from A to B here. And, you know, anything they complain about with the Affordable Care Act, as we've, you know, Social Security, Medicare, many other programs we've passed, and no one program has ever been passed and fully implemented as it currently is, you know, from the start, right? Social Security didn't have survivor benefits and didn't include domestic workers for racist reasons and other things of that nature. So it's you know, this whole time the Republicans could have been working with President Obama, working with Democrats to make this better, to make this something that helped cover people. I mean, there is a vote, and a number of Democrats were bad on this and should be called out for it, on reimportation of drugs from Canada.
Yep.
That is one way you'd bring down prescription drug prices. Under Medicare, you know, we're the only place that refuses to allow bulk negotiation, you know, by our big government entity. I mean, that's insane, because this is what the free market should be if you really believed in that kind of thing, which a lot of Republicans claim to. So we're not making it as cheap as possible, and we're doing that on purpose, because they want this thing to fail. That's all this comes down to, and they've always wanted it to fail, and they've never tried to make it better. Is it perfect? No. Are we all, I think, listening to this right now in favor of single payer? Absolutely. But this was a road to there, and if these guys were willing to improve upon what was passed, healthcare at this point could be cheaper, even more people could be included. This is something we know how to do. You cannot do it without the government's willingness to spend some money to help people who are less fortunate, which in a democratic society, when we all agree to live together in some sort of a commonwealth, should be something you believe in. It's just that simple.
And I, you know, at this stage, the thing that people have to remember is that what they're hearing is fundamentally a lie. The Republicans are not interested in replacing anything. If they felt they could get away with their own voters allowing them to basically go back to where we were, and frankly even roll back the risk pools, the state risk pools, they would do it. But I monologued there a little bit, Cliff, but I wanted to get this out there because this is something we've got to hammer.
Important.
Yeah.
And I'll just say, you know, the two other things, and this is what everybody else is forgetting too, which is hilarious considering what Republicans say they're in favor of, is at this point also eliminating Obamacare is going to cost tons of jobs, and it is also going to blow up the deficit. So, and I shouldn't say blow up, that's sort of Republican scare record, you know, scare quotes kind of stuff, but it will add to the deficit. There's really nothing, there's nothing you could sit there and say, this is a great reason why this should be repealed. There just isn't. And everything else they say, again, any problem they can find with this is something that could have been fixed, is could have been helped along.
Not even could have, and, could be. Right? I mean, they could.
No, still could, exactly. But I could have, I meant, you know, when it came out, if they'd wanted to make it better, if they want to, you know, clearly they don't, and as a party, they never will.
Cliffy?
That is what you're dealing with.
I guess we will talk again. Now, next week is the frickin' inauguration. So,
oh my God, it is.
Well, I will be in touch with you as to what we're going to do for that. I mean,
yeah, we need to figure out how to handle that, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And are people here? Well, we'll talk more about it. But I'll be in touch. Don't forget,
have to watch
folks.
It, do I?
Good. I don't. Maybe not.
I think I can read other what people say about it and cover it that way.
We'll do some counter programming. Maybe we'll do like we'll play Red Dawn on our channel.
Oh yeah, let's come up with some cool ideas like that. I like it.
Been wanting to do that for a while. There was
great.
Even just going to be, we were going to just do movie night if you couldn't make it. Watch Red Dawn.
Well, so Cliff, we'll be in touch. People, you can go to majority.fm to get the link to Cliff's GoFundMe page or check out his Twitter feed for it, and we will retweet it on majority.fm, or you can just Google GoFundMe unprecedented, right?
Yep.
Or all right.
I
so,
mean, you have to spell it the way Trump did, unprecedented.
Right, because, unprecedented. Right. I can barely even say
but,
it.
But yes, please do. And I just want to thank everybody because it's gone up a couple $500, I believe, since we've been here. So thank you so much, everyone, and look forward to hopefully doing the podcast.
Great. All right.
We'll talk next week.
We'll see you later, Cliff. Thanks, buddy.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. We're going to take a break here. Have we figured out what we're doing for the inauguration? Are you guys, who's going down? Have we not figured that out yet?
I'm the only one going.
Are you going on Friday?
Yes. Well, I'm going down there on Thursday so that we can get in.
I was planning
going Friday and Saturday.
To the one in New York.
To the inauguration in New York?
There's a protest in New York.
There's
a major protest.
You didn't know about that? Bunch of cities, yeah.
Yes, no, yeah. I did know that. All right. Well, we'll figure it out. We got to talk about that this afternoon. Folks, just a reminder before we go to the great Andy Kindler. This show relies on your membership. If you can become a member, please do. I've got the email from him. I haven't responded yet, but we got a very generous offer yesterday from a member who's sponsoring three other memberships. And but like I say, we never turn anyone away. So if you want to become a member, and it's very gratifying for us to know, you know, particularly when people are having difficult times, that they enjoy listening to the show. And so if we can provide that, by all means, it's why we do it. Until, of course, we follow Ghost Protocol, and then we'll just be gone. One day you'll just show up and we'll be gone. That's the way that will work. All right. Take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Andy Kindler.
Hard to see when it's all red.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report, ladies and gentlemen. One of the things that is one of the things that we in this day and age, ladies and gentlemen, when we hear all sorts of stories about pee parties and bank loans and the CIA versus the FBI versus the Israeli intelligence agencies versus and we don't know what is up and what is down. We need a beacon to look to see a way of knowing which way the horizon actually is. And this song is that.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, Andy believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, Andy Kindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your own theme song, Andy Kindler.
Now, Andy, we were going to practice how you answer the phone.
Oh, I'm sorry. All forget right. That. Forget that.
Forget that.
Pretend I didn't sing through there.
Okay. Ring.
Hello?
Andy?
Hi. Who's this? Is this the party to who I'm speaking?
Well, no,
remember the bits I used to do on Laughing? They were so great.
Now, Andy, when I called you, you said, like, I'm really bad at answering the phone. And I
proved myself wrong.
There you go. I think you did a great job at that. Maybe you need to be warmed up. Maybe people should call, let it ring.
Yes.
You answer, they hang up, they call you back.
Give out my number. It's Salino and Barnes, mystery attorneys. Do you have mystery? Are they mystery attorneys?
I don't. I've
Salino
never heard of
and
them.
Barnes, they're mystery attorneys.
Are they mystery attorneys?
No, they're injury attorneys.
Injury
attorneys. And then is there an 800 number that starts where you can get an 888?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they didn't go that route. They went 800. They said 800-888-8888. If they wanted to make it that simple, if they're thinking of someone who was injured in an accident and their brain's not functioning, make them all eights. Okay, Salino and or Barnes?
Well, it's not so easy to get all eights. That's a very coveted number, I bet.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's probably taken. What was I thinking? I bet Murray Hill 4-3000 is taken.
They're all taken. What are you doing? Are you doing a some type
a bit?
Of? Yeah. What are you doing on the comedy on Comedy Central? What's going on with that?
Oh, in 2008, I was prescient. Prescient. I told you that word, right?
I'm Hold on for a second. Let's play this bad boy. Why are we even talking? Okay.
Why would you call me? What's the point? When you can get me when I'm more reliably funny, pre-recorded.
I just sent it to Matt. All right. So cue this up for us because I want to hear.
All
I want to know.
2008 is the root of all evil, and I am.
Wait, what does that mean? The root of
I
all
was,
evil.
Ahead of the curve, not financially, not in terms of being known. Not in terms of popularity, but I was, I was anti-Trump way before. I was one of the first people.
Now, wait a second. What is root of all evil?
Sam, you used to be in the comedy business, and it was a show hosted by Louis Black on Comedy Central where you'd argue what was the root of all evil.
I never heard of that.
On this show, it was, what's the root of all evil, Donald Trump or Viagra?
Oh, okay.
Because we mixed it up.
I never even heard about that. B, why would that would have been? That seems like that would have been something that I would have been invited on to.
Didn't you tell me once on the phone that you purposefully tanked when you got on shows?
Well, no. I mean,
I thought you told me that.
No,
that you were on some show and you didn't want it to be portrayed a certain way, so you acted strangely in the pilot. Am I wrong about that? Is there any truth?
I know what you're referring to. On According to Jim, I was afraid. I was booked in the pilot of According to Jim, and I didn't ever think it would get picked up. And then I realized, like, as the show was going, like, oh my God, Jim Belushi, because he had been on 20,000 failed. Yes, exactly. He had been on 20,000 failed. Did that just happen? That's like the Russians did that.
You know my line. You know my line about that. Who died and made Jim Belushi a big star?
Oh my God! And
too soon?
Yeah, no.
Or too late?
Too late. I think no. I think it's perfect. I mean, it would have been great though when he was like people don't even remember him now. I don't think, but he.
Who do you mean, Bob Woodward?
No,
he wrote that book. About Belushi. Wired.
And I realized that Belushi was going to, that the show was actually going to go, and I was cast as, what's-her-face's brother.
The wife's brother.
Yeah, and she's like this blonde-haired, blue-eyed, sort of about as Aryan as it gets. And so I decided I was going to talk like Jackie Mason on the set. In the scenes. Like, to the point where the director said to me, like, do you feel like you're moving your hands a lot? I'm like, no, what are you talking about? And I changed my phone ringer to If I Were a Rich Man, and I had Benjamin keep calling me on the set. So I ended up getting fired because they were just like, it's just not working. We were either going to fire her, Courtney Thorne Smith, or you, and... It just didn't make sense that you were her brother. And I'm like, why do you say that? All right. So anyways.
By the way,
I didn't want to be stuck on that show.
If we didn't want people to think that we're greedy, why would we write a song about it, wishing to be rich, right? Exactly. If I had some money, ziggy zaggy zai zoo zoo, yeah, yeah, yeah. All day long with the greasy money. If I was a wealthy Jew, money.
There you go. Well, it proved.
Ooh, I like that money. Ooh, I like it so much that I say zidle deedle doodle dang. That's how much I love money. Ooh, ba doop ba doop.
Well, Andy, all of what you're saying is true, but I have to tell you, it was a very lucrative play.
Look, we just have love of money, and the Jewish people, it's a tradition for us to sing about how much we love dollars.
Yeah, but
I'm sorry. The impression got worse as I continued. Less than zero Mostel.
You know who directed the movie too, right?
Well, first of all, did you know Starsky and/or Hutch is in the movie?
Of course. I've watched that movie many times. Paul Michael Glazier is in that. I met him and got his autograph.
I had seen it once when I was on the road, and I couldn't believe it. I where was I as a child? Except. I do remember I was hiding from my Judaism, but
do you? How did that go?
Not good.
I am as Gentile as it gets.
I'm a self-hating Jew.
Excuse me.
How can you be a self-hating Jew? I say, spend a day at my temple where I grew up.
My name is Andy Kindler. I am a goy.
I'm a goy. No, I'm not Jewish. I don't know about the Jewish people that you're referencing.
You know who directed that? Honestly, Norman Jewison.
Mike Nichols.
Norman Jewison. I think it was. All right. So,
it sounds like a bit. It sounds like a Catskills that
I know.
We're doing.
All right. So let's listen to Andy Kindler on Lewis Black's Root of All Evil when he had the foresight of beginning his campaign against Donald Trump then. Maybe it should have started a couple years earlier, but here it is. Donald Trump versus Viagra.
Our battle is between Donald Trump and Viagra. Stiff and stiffer. Andy, state your case.
That sounds like fake laugh.
Donald Trump is the root of all evil because his biggest achievement was The Apprentice. What was that? All he did was string together adjectives and cross-promote. Am I right, poor man's George Lopez? You will meet in the lobby of Trump Towers, the greatest building ever made. Using the finest architecture available, you will then go to a third grade class in Manhattan, the finest third grade class in all the five boroughs. The son of the president of the Nestle's Corporation is in that class. N-E-S-T-L-E-S. Nestle's makes the very best chocolate. love what you do. And he's always announcing projects that don't happen. I will build the greatest time machine ever made using the finest time machine ingredients available. He puts his name on everything. Trump cologne, Trump vodka, Trump steaks. Thank you for saving the steak, Donald. I was on the fence about it before you came along. He's so insane, he started Trump University, but it's not even a university, it's just a website. How would you recruit students for that?
Excellent hair, son. You're on your way. Did you care to see a brochure from Trump University? It's the best university in the country. Hey, UCLA, great school. There wasn't already USC.
I am an art major.
What's your dream?
To be an artist.
You know why that's called a dream?
Why?
Because it's not going to happen.
Where exactly is the campus?
There is no campus. That is how we save the money.
Is there a job placement program?
No.
So there's no standard?
No standards at all.
Okay.
No standard. We've eliminated standards, in fact.
I bombed my SATs.
That's fine with us. We don't even want to know.
Do I get to meet Donald Trump?
You will not get to meet Donald Trump.
What is our kid going to learn?
We have an entire course in firing. We also have a minor in laying off people. We have a course in looking like you know what you're saying. And then we have a very popular summer course in yelling.
So you don't offer any extracurricular opportunities?
Since you're not going to physical university, since there's no accreditation, there's no way to graduate, there's no specific time to go to class, there's no way of judging or grading the class, there's no curriculum.
There seems to be a lot of concern about school shootings and violence these days.
We don't allow guns on the campus that we don't have.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Your comedy is psychic, Andy. That's everything.
I know. It's 2008.
Dude, why has this been buried? Where was this? You did better Oppo research than the Bush campaign, for God's sakes.
My brother told me, why you should call Comedy Central and have them replay it. So I called. I asked Kent Alterman. And I finally had a contact that worked out.
Wow, that's good. How is old Kent Alterman?
Because they you can buy them on DVD, but they don't have much of it up online.
Wow. Well, I mean that was pretty amazing. The Trump University stuff. We were just sitting here with our jaws slack jaw, just sort of like what?
Projects that never happen. I mean.
Jesus. What's that?
I mean, just the projects that never happened part was like, that's like literally the center of the campaign. I also really liked the specialty in talking like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't often, when I nail it in a sketch, it's a big day in celebration at the Kimmler household.
I could see you're still running off of the one years ago.
Yeah, I'm still running off the heat from that.
So let me ask you about
clip.
This, Andy. I saw a piece the other day in New Yorker magazine talking about how comedians, some writer went into a club in New York and said,
oh, I haven't seen this.
And said that nobody's making jokes about Trump because it's just not funny.
Who's the writer who said that? I can't even believe it.
I don't know, but I think it was right after the election, which I can understand to a certain extent. Like, you know, you get up there and you make... It feels like, I mean, these jokes for 2008, incredibly prescient. But now it sort of feels like this is like it would be, you know, I don't want to get, you know, you need a little bit of time, right? As opposed to...
we're all stunned.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't feel any different than I felt the night of the election when we're all watching it, except for... the fear that we will all be incinerated in some kind of attack of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, so is there, I mean, are you going into clubs and are you like able to joke about Trump, or do you just sit up there and just sort of stare at the audience for a while and then say thank you and go?
No, because I thought, and like everybody else, I thought it would be over November 9th, whenever the day after the election was. But, you know, the thing where I say... the Trump's centration camps. I will get the Jews to pay for the camps. It's still
the Jews
working
will
well,
pay
but,
for their own camps.
The Jews will pay for the camps. Also the idea of did they ever ask if Hitler was going to pivot? But I don't want to do the material. I don't want there to be good material around now. It's just so. I really sometimes still can't believe that it happened, and that's getting worse every day too.
Yeah, it's how did you? I mean, what have you been obsessing about this week in terms of
the
news?
Well, here's the thing. You know, I don't know if everybody remembers this, but back in October, you see, this is the thing that was so terrible. Comey. Have you ever listened to that guy Matt Miller? He's very good.
Excuse me. Which one?
Well, I know this is the Matt Miller, the left, right, and center government. Yeah. No, this is the guy
the
who
other
was
Matt
the
right.
Yeah, and he talked about he was complaining when Comey came out. If you're not going to indict somebody, you don't say about how bad they were. It's over. Comey should never have been talking about. And then Hillary kept saying, "I've been exonerated," and then the media, whether it's Cuomo or all these people, say no. Comey didn't exonerate you. And I was like screaming. They were giving her Pinocchios. And I was like, how can you give her Pinocchios? She's absolutely right. She was exonerated. She was not charged. But because they kept wanting her to say over and over again, I'm sorry. I had the private server. I'm sorry about the private server. I heard Willie Geist the other day say, if Jason Chaffetz stopped the investigation into her email now, that would look political. Why was the Congress ever looking into? Why did they ever have one meeting about her emails? It had nothing to do with anything they were looking into. The fact that the media and the Washington Post, they gave her Pinocchios, it was just such a complete lie. She was exonerated. Nobody thinks. The only way she could have been indicted for something is if you really thought she said, hey, look at this classified information. Mimeograph some of this. And drop it, leaflet it.
Apropos of this, Andy, I'm just seeing now at 11:30 a.m. on the Hill, a number of House Democrats left Friday's confidential briefing on Russian hacking.
Maxine Waters.
Fuming over the action. This just happened a couple hours ago, this morning. Apparently, they left. Here's a couple of quotes. Tim Walz. I was non-judgmental until the last 15 minutes. I no longer have that confidence in him, said Tim Walz, ranking members of the Veterans Affairs Committee. Some of the things that were revealed in this classified briefing, my confidence has been shook. Elijah Cummings, senior Democrat on the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, said, I'm extremely concerned, extremely. I'm very angry, said Representative Mark Tucano. They're revealing something about this stuff that is... Wow.
Well, do you remember the FBI New York office? I follow this Sarah Kendzior. She's been talking about the Russian connections since like the 80s. And do you remember when all of a sudden the FBI website just started to print out all this stuff about Bill Clinton a couple of weeks before the election?
The Twitter
element
account
of the FBI.
I know what you're talking about. There's a Twitter account that was dormant for years. And literally 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the election started publishing Bill Clinton documents from the Ken Starr thing or something to that effect. Yes.
Yeah, and who's telling Giuliani? Someone from the FBI is telling Giuliani. So there's some rogue element in the FBI, and either Comey knows about it and is cooperating with it, I don't know what he's scared of. Or he's just the most incompetent person in the history of the world. I don't know. Something is terribly wrong, and I think there should be a revote. Has there been a revote recently?
You mean a revote for the presidency?
Yeah, someone should look it up in the Constitution. Is there something about in California we do the recall?
Right.
That's how we got Gray Davis out and Schwarzenegger in.
We don't have a recall.
People don't remember these things that I remember.
You're like a repository of information.
And you would let everybody know on Twitter.
He's the keeper of the flame.
Is that great?
I'm an eccentric man who remembers minutia about politics.
Well, hey, Chris Cuomo.
I'm Steve Cuomo.
Andy, what do you make of this golden shower stuff? I mean, we have to ask you about it. I mean, I want to ask you about Paul Ryan.
What have you heard? You look. I do a certain kind of yoga. It's Bikram urine yoga. Oh, I'm the bad guy now? Oh, I'm the bad guy.
That's perfect. Because, you know, Bikram is
the... I'm the bad guy
like
because
the...
I do a form of yoga where I circulate my own urine all over my body. Oh, so that's bad. Oh, so that's now verboten. Oh.
Trump has ruined your golden...
Oh, urine's bad now?
Trump has ruined... Trump has ruined...
Who died and made urine bad?
You know, Andy, that's...
Trump has ruined golden showers for everybody.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, no, it's...
Well, I was trying to keep you from making that joke.
What? It's true.
I can't masturbate anymore.
I guess so.
Thinking about golden showers that
happened. Bikram is like the Donald Trump of yoga.
You know, you went blue. I blame Michael, but you guys went blue on me, and now you drag me down into your blue
act. Let's rebound. What do you think about Paul Ryan?
Cleaner, dirty.
What's that?
Remember when you used to close your act with cleaner, dirty, folks? What do you want me to do? Cleaner, dirty.
That's
joke
right.
You can joke you can take home.
Always keep it clean.
That's I would always do. I would always my material was always very clean.
I know that
it was not funny.
Except
but it was
remember the
clean.
Time that you tried to act like Jackie Bear. You went on the set of According to the Gym, and you said, "I don't know Jim. This man over here, his
honestly,
name is Jim."
There was one point
and I'm
I was
brother-in-law's wife.
I remember the scene, and I'm like, "Jim, I just don't understand. Like, why are you always denying my emotions?" And the director sort of like came up and was just sort of very sort of like tried to be gentle about it. Do you feel like you're moving your hand, like you're gesticulating a lot?
That's so
like
great.
Maybe. And I'm like, no, I don't. What are you talking about? That's sort of my thing.
How much of your career have you spent trying to jerry rig it so you don't get the thing you're going out for?
I mean, less and less now that the opportunities are far and few between. But wait till I tell you the time about I sat in the room with what was that guy's name? The guy who did Ally McBeal and
David Kelly.
Yeah, David Kelly offered me the boyfriend role, that Gil somebody role. I said, no way, buddy. Nice try.
You're trying to give me financial and career stability.
You're not getting me
no
to be on that
way
show
I'm gonna do
for
it.
5 years. Forget that.
No, you told him in a certain way.
I remember going to an audition like years later with David Kelly's number two, who was in the room. And I sat across the table from him, and he's auditioning me, and I could just see him look at me like, where do I know this guy from? Oh, my God. And he just sort of like, I could just see it on his face. Really, I was like, you're the fucking idiot who walked away from David. This is when David Kelly was on the top of the heap. Like, he had done some law show before that was huge. And I remember, like, all my agents and manager was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't like that role.
I'm going to go do my Joe Lieberman son impression.
Yeah, exactly.
You can go screw yourself.
Andy, it's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
So
this is like a radio play now.
So I was watching one episode of Lady Dynamite on Netflix.
Right.
I don't know. Sam did that. I've only seen one episode, so I don't know if you're in it. Maybe you are, but in the main character's agent's office, there are two framed pictures of you.
Yeah.
Why?
Because my manager, that character is like not my manager, my real manager, but it's like a takeoff on my real manager.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like a running joke through the whole show. And I actually taped something, but they didn't include it. It was kind of like, my acting is normally good, but on this particular day, no. but yeah, so, but I've gotten a lot of activity from people seeing, and also, I think I have Kindler's List T-shirts made up at some point.
Oh my god! No, I mean
it's a great
just,
show.
It's really confusing because yeah. I mean I saw that and I had to rewind and be like, "Is this real?" Like, there's a picture of Andy Kindler on the desk and on the wall, and you know. Then I also saw Search Party. And it was like, and Judy Gold was on it. And it was one of
those. Search Party? I don't know what Search Party
is. It's a show on TBS. So Judy Gold appeared in that, and I had to, it took me a minute because I was like, oh, I know her. And it's like, no, you don't know her. And then I was, had to go back and be like, oh, right. So I had to rewind and be like, yeah, Andy Kindler really is.
They put Andy in, they put the Andy in the background of most shows, actually. Most shows.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm also in the studio audience of Mr. Show. And people go, is this you? Is this you? Is it really that hard to believe that in the 90s I would be watching a show as opposed to being in it? Is that really a shocker? How could Andy Kindler be in the audience of something? Oh, you mean as opposed to the star of Mr. Show?
Well, the audience was full of all comedians that you see on TV now, probably. I mean,
yeah,
I
well, maybe
shows.
I shouldn't have been craning my neck, and I shouldn't have had my manager's phone number.
It was
on
weird
my
for you to wave.
I shouldn't be waving.
During that that thing. That was odd. That was awkward. Well,
how many times when you act, though, Sam, did you want... I've always wanted to... I know you're not supposed to look at the camera, so all I think of while I'm acting, I hope I don't look at that camera now.
Well...
That's what's going on internally. I don't know how most actors are internally.
Listen, I directed you in a classic scene in Who's the Caboose. In fact,
I love doing that.
We
I
made a whole
that. That
song.
That was one of my best characters. I think it was playing me, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Well, more or less. I mean, you were playing a writer for a show.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah. Which is not plausible.
No. Not plausible at all. And you did the Stacey Papadouski song, which we
Stacey Papadouski, Papadouski, Stacey Papadouski, Papadakis.
So Andy, so tell me, like, what are you doing? What's on the horizon now?
Oh well, you know, I told myself when I go on radio shows, I have to just stop bragging about all the things I'm doing. That's not what it's about. Just have a good time, and don't talk about my upcoming projects.
Okay.
So. Did that work?
Well, I mean, was that your New Year's resolution? Is that what's going on here?
Well, I actually have some things happening. I have the first State of the Industry I ever did in 1996 is going to be coming out on as like an audio thing. And that's the speech I do in Montreal. And I've listened to it, and it was actually, I didn't mind listening to it.
Oh, and that's great.
I'm not a fan.
So where do we access that?
That's going to be online somewhere, and it should be actually coming, you know, like everything else. I have a comedy CD that I've been, what's it called when you put things off?
Procrastinating?
Procrastinated, yeah. So that should have been coming. I recorded a CD which is going to be called Hence the Humor.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the Humor. And that was recorded in 2013. But I made sure to do future references in, so I talked about Bitcoins. Things like that, and President Boehner, that kind
of
thing.
Wait a second. All of the projects now, including the amazing thing we started off the show with today, are all, like, you're almost going into the back catalog. Where's the new stuff, Andy?
Oh, I don't do anything new because I've been told that you shouldn't do new things because if it's not good, then people think of you as currently not good.
Right.
So I get it. So you do
past tense good.
You do stuff from years ago so that people can say, like, well, maybe he's improved.
Well, you know, I don't know how you guys feel about this Y2K. Why not 2K is what I say. So what's going to happen? When it hits the year 2000, is my clock going to turn into an apple?
Wait a second.
This guy does not know what I'm talking about.
did you prepare for Y2K, Sam? I feel like you're the type of guy who would have gotten a bunch of power bars for Y2K.
That's
a weak preparation. I did actually go to Vegas on the millennia, and it was so boring. Nobody, because everyone was so scared to go, nobody really partied.
I did not. I'm trying to think. I wasn't that worried about it, really, because I didn't. You know, I didn't care. I didn't have any responsibilities. I was just in, you know, just hanging out.
It was one of the few things you couldn't sabotage.
Exactly. Or maybe I did.
Ooh.
Everyone's
like
nothing all excited.
Happened. Everybody's all excited for Y2K. How about I pull the plug on this whole thing?
Is that Scorsese on the phone?
I wish that's the way you actually talk.
No,
all the time.
I will not play the Jewish accountant.
I will definitely pull the plug on this. Sorry, Y2K. Maybe you'll have to wait until Y3K.
I think I came up with this line the other night that made me laugh and still makes me laugh, and I'm sure it will not get a laugh, but I say I'm a regular Norm Cosby.
There you go.
What? That, to me, is a delightful joke. Because he messes up words.
Right, right.
So I'm messing up his words. Now, forget about the fact that nobody knows the reference anymore.
I know who Norm Cosby is.
I do not.
Here's some of my favorite Crosby jokes.
Let me tell these guys who he was. He was a guy who would basically...
malapropisms,
I guess, and misnomers for things. And that was his whole shtick.
It's a very excruciating experience to meet you. Oh. It's like Archie Bunker. It's like the Archie Bunker stuff. Okay, here's an actual Norm Cosby joke. Why is there an expiration date on sour cream? Is it gonna go good?
Oh, was that one of his jokes?
Yeah.
What a putz.
I love this one. And I actually have made fun of this one. Why do kamikaze pilots wear helmets? I don't know, Norm. The war has been over for 70 years.
What the fuck?
They would be odd that the kamikaze pilots would still be wearing them.
So wait, was he still making this joke in the year 2010?
May not 2010, but when I was doing the joke, probably in the night. I've been doing comedy since I'm an 80s comic in the sense that I started in the 80s. That seemed funny in my head, too.
Yeah.
What was it like to start in the 80s when, like, Dice Clay and
that was
like,
before TV, right?
Those guys were like, what was it like for you to come into that comedy environment, Andy?
Well, you know, what Sam is saying is actually true, because I used to go, what is the deal with these new remote controls? In my day, you got up, you went to the TV. He said, oh, excuse me, put the wire hanger and lean it against the window. I'm getting bad reception. Boom! That's nice TV. Does it come in color?
Andy, let me ask you this. I don't want to change the subject. But how come...
I think I'm killing.
How come I get so many tweets at me saying Andy Kindler accidentally blocked me?
Oh, well, if I blocked someone accidentally, I'll unblock them.
All right.
Who's now? Who do I do now?
Well,
how's that?
Wait, can I ask you, Andy? I have a question, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I mean,
I have emotional problems. There's no question about it.
Right. I know. I mean, a given. But
okay. No, well, no, I really do have anger issues, but I'm getting better.
Okay. No, yeah, that's fair. Maybe you did answer my question. I see you go in on people like Chris Cuomo, and it's amazing. Because what I love is that
I
they
told him
can't...
he should go home and take his handsome
pill. Oh, yeah, can we even talk about that?
No, we should talk about it more, but what I thought we did talk about that, right? No, we didn't.
I don't remember.
Maybe we just talked about it in the
office.
What
I'm just wondering is first of all, what's hilarious is that none of these people can actually really ignore you because you have so many followers and you're like an actual, you know, person, which makes it great. Like, they would like to respond to you as if you're an egg with 20 people, and then they look at you and they're like, oh, fuck. But
I'm going to have to really actually engage.
But how can you have the temerity to block people when you were like the number one instigator on Twitter, man?
Oh, yeah, and then I will WikiLeaks block me, so I was calling them cowards.
WikiLeaks blocked you.
I'm not afraid.
That's a great takeaway. That says a lot.
How does WikiLeaks block somebody?
Yeah, that's
amazing.
Right. Here's my new thing. I say to the people, mute, wait 10 minutes, then block. And then I don't do either one of them. And that seems to be good recently.
Okay.
What do you mean, wait? What do you mean, mute?
In other words, I say to them, they say something stupid, say something that bothers me in the moment, right? I hate any kind of comment like, would you calm down already? Why don't you calm down?
Hey, Andy, would you calm down? Hillary belongs in jail.
Wait, it's so not
yeah, Hillary is, Obama with drones.
So wait,
I did that to someone the other day. How about the drones?
I like how Andy brings in an actual kind of legitimate thing. I don't want to hear about the drones anymore.
Someone says, I really liked Obama. How about the drones?
Wait, actually, will you play that out, Gandhi? Go ahead.
Hey, I like Obama. How about the drones?
What about the drones?
Yeah. Oh, wait a second. Hold on. You know, I didn't think about that. Are you saying there's been a use of drones since he's been in office? Thank you for opening my eyes, Cornel West.
We're going deep. You really want to pick something, Cornel West? That everybody should know.
On the Tavis Smiley Show. welcome to the Tavis Smiley Show. Today on the show, my guest is Cher and her song "Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves."
Do you remember that's how Andy is an Obama bot? That is where it came from. I think it was literally one of the first weeks that I was on the show. You were really giving Andy a hard time. Andy was a little off his game. He was definitely and Sam was going in on him, and somehow they were talking about Obama, and then Andy did the Obama bot bit, which is like,
I think he is the greatest president that I have ever experienced in my life.
I love drones.
Like,
I love drones.
Like a Jewish, you remember that? Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da.
You said I love drones.
I love drones.
I love drones.
Drones are very good. What do you want to have somebody in the plane that could get hurt? Send them without anybody.
It's more convenient.
Hey, no,
Obama is a genius.
I thought an unmanned drone was Jay Leno at a corporate gig. Huh? Huh?
Oh, my God.
You remember when they called them unmanned drones? Those were the days when my material really worked.
Andy, we have to go. I'm afraid.
I don't mind.
Is that another Crosby joke?
No, it's like I'm so ready to bump myself. I would have bumped myself if I were you guys.
No, it's been a pleasure.
This
I can't
greatest.
Believe how quickly the time has passed.
I love you.
What are you going to do for the inauguration? Just tell us that.
Are
you going to watch it?
Is that a Tuesday? It's on. I don't know. I think he's going to get impeached immediately. And I have two words for you. President Pence.
President Pence.
President Pence.
What if it turns out that he's actually the Russian agent?
Right, Pence gets up there and goes, hi, everybody. Actually, I have something to announce. Hello, comrade. I have many a plan for a country. We are still doing homosexual reparative therapy. That's not changing. But everything else, RT Official State Network, re-education camp, Jew comic, Andy Kindler.
What if they're
Boris
Badenoff? What if Putin's
Minister
sitting there going
defense.
Like, can't believe they think it's Trump. They can't believe they think it's Trump. It's been Pence the whole time. And they think it's Trump.
It is Tiffany Trump whole time. She has planned it all. She is like Game of Thrones lady.
Andy.
The power will rise the least attractive daughter.
Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
I love
us.
You.
All right, we'll talk
I
to you soon.
I will see you all. I'll
will you let me know next time you're coming to New York?
I'm not going to watch it, but
will you let me know next time you're coming to New York?
What's that?
Will you let me know the next time you come into New York?
Yeah, yeah. I'm coming in at the end of February.
Really?
I'll let you guys know.
Because I'll tell you something. I'll do a live podcast just if you can build it around you.
Yeah. Ooh. That would be cool.
All right, let's talk about this.
All right, man.
All right, ooh, money. Bye.
Money. Wow.
Money. Shekels. If you paid me in studio, and I could come into the studio and make a couple of shekels. Bang, bang. Oi, oi, oi.
Hi, Andy. Oh, gosh.
Andy really doing a lot for the Jew brand. Do you remember that scene in Curb Your Enthusiasm? There was an episode where Larry finds out that supposedly he was adopted, and he's really excited because it means he's not Jewish. And in the beginning of the episode, he's flying out, and he still thinks he's Jewish, and the flight attendant is like, you know, you're in an emergency lane, so are you prepared to help if the plane goes down? He's just, you know, of course, like, no, I'm going to need to change seats. I don't think I'm really prepared for that. And, you know, I actually paid for this ticket, but now I got to kind of work for you in a certain sense. It's completely inappropriate. He's a total pain in the ass. And then on the flight back, when he thinks he's Christian, He's in the same spot. He goes, no problem. Nothing a good stiff shot of scotch could have do to steal my nerves and rescue some lives. He couldn't be more God. Pleasant.
Wow. This whole thing with the House members. That they learned something that went beyond the letter. That it has to do with Trump and...
Did they actually watch the video?
I have no idea. But this, I mean, we are... We're going to wrap up the fun half in a second, but we are entering into a period which I think is just going to be... we're going to wrap up the free half in a second. We're entering into a period that I think is just going to be chaotic at best.
Watch the eyes, Nadia.
But, you know.
It already is chaotic, man. I mean, I know you understand what you're saying, but I mean, chaotic is the least of it. We're in a inbuilt constitutional crisis.
I don't know. It's sort of stunning. I don't know if this makes me angrier or more understanding on some level, and maybe the information is just leaked. I don't know. That the Democrats didn't pull those sort of like more extreme maneuvers to like seat Garland, although I think they should have just done that anyway.
Of course they should have done that. And they should have been Cornel West.
Although his campaign may be over, for Bernie Sanders, the political revolution has just begun. Follow along as Sanders spins lessons about what really matters in life. It's according to the Washington Post, his multi-month New York Times bestseller, Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. For more information, visit OurRevolutionBook.com, hashtag read the burn. Again, that's OurRevolution.com. I'm going to take a quick break.
We got that. Want to play the Jimmy song?
Oh, yeah. Apologies. We're going to take a quick break after we play the Jimmy song. And Jimmy Reefcake send in a song. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Leave us a review on iTunes. Become a member. You can gift the show. Check out Two Dope Boys. And a podcast. And here is Jimmy Reefer Cake's tune, which will, lead us out of the show.
It's called Golden Shower.
Ooh, where did that come from?
Legislative body, sure could use some curing. They've served up a poo sandwich with a steamy cup of urine. Russian whores on a hotel bed, all drenched and soaking wet. And Donald Trump elected, how much lower can we get? They formed a new religion, a right-wing sect of pagans. They'll sacrifice our future to the ghost of Ronald Reagan. They say that if you bring their taxes just a nickel down, they'll be showering the nation in their steamy trickle down. The working class is carrying this country on our backs. We suffer from inflation and we pay the highest tax. They provide the golden shower, they refine the gas. They'll make sure at the gas pump we all take it in the ass. Low taxes for the wealthy who seek to keep their power. In exchange, they promise a steaming golden shower, 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 like Russian whores on a hotel bed, drenched and soaking wet. Donald Trump elected, how much lower can we get?
Mm-hmm.
new hair.